Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Azure Power conference call to discuss a private placement. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Nathan Judge. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Raymond, and good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. Last night, the company issued a press release announcing it has issued $75 million of equity in a private placement to its largest shareholder, CDPQ. A copy of the press release is available on the investors section of Azure's Power website at azurepower.com. With me today are Ranjit Gupta and Pawan Agrawal, Chief Financial Officer. Ranjit will provide some comments on this, and after that, we will open up the call for questions. Please note, our safe harbor statements are contained within our press release and available on our website. These statements are important and integral to all our remarks. There are risks and uncertainties that could cause our results to differ materially and from those expressed or implied by such forward-looking statements. So we encourage you to review the press release we furnished in our Form 6K on our website for a more complete description. It is now my pleasure to hand it over to Ranjit.
Thank you, Nathan, and a very good morning, everyone. Murali and I joined Azure about 3 months ago and continue to review the business through the lens of creating value for shareholders through financial discipline. During our review, we realized that we needed equity in the next several months to fund the committed projects under construction and in development. We have done a thorough review of the projects that we are building and committed to. We believe that post the rationalization of the committed projects, there is an equity gap to be filled. With this in mind, last night, we announced that we have reached an agreement with CDPQ to issue $75 million or 6.5 million shares at 11.55 per share in a private placement, which will fully fund the equity needs for our committed pipeline. This price is an approximate 3% premium to the 90-day VWAP. This proposed additional investment by CDPQ illustrates our largest shareholder's commitment to our platform. We believe that we have the right portfolio of assets, and raising equity at this price is value accretive for the company. Shareholders will have an opportunity to vote on this in a special general meeting scheduled for the 6th of December, as we are asking for shareholders to allow the company to issue more than 10% of the current shares outstanding, as well as waiver of preemptive rights. In the final analysis, it became clear that we needed this equity and the strong commitment by CDPQ to our platform provided us the best option available for the equity we needed in the time frame in which we needed. Recently, I met many of you to better understand what our investors believe will create value. There were many constructive comments which we are evaluating presently. We expect to provide updates on the review of our portfolio as well as initiatives to increase disclosure next week during our second quarter FY20 earnings call on Friday, November 15th. To name a few, we will be providing EBITDA and FFO guidance, the debt associated with our operational portfolio as well as our pipeline, PLF, CapEx forecasts, enhanced disclosures around capital costs, and DSO by counterparty. We also recognize the importance of ESG disclosure and are planning to provide a sustainability report by the end of fiscal year 2020. The truth is, we do a lot of terrific work on the ground and have a natural ESG advantage as we are a solar developer and listed on the NYSE. We need to do a better job of telling our story. With this, we will be happy to take questions.
Sure, thank you very much. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. To ask questions, please press star and one. The first question is from the line of Philip from Rogue. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for the questions. I may have dialed in a little bit late here, but I just want to make sure I get this out there. But can you guys give us a clearer sense of the use of proceeds for the $75 million? You know, specifically, how many megawatts do you expect it to fund and over what time frame? Thanks.
Thanks for the question, Philip. So the $75 million that we have placed yesterday will basically help fund the capacity that we have committed to between 3,000 to 3,200 megawatts. So, you know, we have some of the equity. Currently, we are about 1,800 megawatts. So, you know, I'm building the rest. And we have equity for most of it. There was a small gap which we needed to fill, and that is why we have done this placement. So this money will go towards funding equity for the committed portfolio.
Great. Thank you, Ranjit. Did you guys, what other options did you guys consider? And shifting topics as well, you know, you mentioned something about some new metrics and disclosures and so forth. When do you expect that you might be able to share some of those new metrics with the investment community?
So Philip, as far as the metrics are concerned, we aim to do that next week in our earnings call, right? For the Q2 earnings call, we will share the metrics that we have mentioned in the transcript.
Great. And then in terms of, did you consider other options for raising this capital, and how did you guys end up deciding to use CDPQ or go with them as opposed to the other options? Thanks.
So, Philip, we, you know, when I met with Nathan, several investors 3 or 4 weeks back, you know, a lot of the investors had suggestions on how we could, what are the strategic alternatives available to us. Some of the folks spoke about rationalizing the portfolio. Some of the folks spoke about selling projects. Some of the folks talked about, you know, finding equity at the SPV level, and so on and so forth. So there were many options that were suggested by the investors also. There were many options we looked at also. We spoke to, obviously, to our large shareholders, and given the timelines that we needed this this equity in, we figured that the alternative offered by CDPQ, which came in very, very quickly, was the best alternative for us to raise this equity. This is not to say that the suggestions that the various shareholders have made, we are not, you know, taking action on them. We are carefully considering all the options that are available to us. Our current focus, of course, is to build out the committed capacity that we have with the same Azure quality that you know, the investors and shareholders are used to. you know, to build them on budget as people are used to build them on time as everyone is used to. So that is our current focus. And the strategic alternatives that we have available, we will certainly, you know, continue to work on them alongside.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that one of the options is that was suggested was to potentially sell projects. Is the selling of assets on the short list at all in terms of an avenue for creating shareholder value? And if so, can you share any details around what that might look like?
So it's too early, Philip, at the moment to do that. But, you know, as far as asset rationalization is concerned, we certainly keep looking at what are the trends in the market. Is there a demand for assets? What are the typical, you know, valuation metrics that are there in the market? What are the returns at which folks are buying projects? And, you know, that keeps on varying. And whenever that is at the right level where we believe, you know, we would make significant, you know, there will be significant advantage for us, we will take that action. We are not wedded to our projects. We are wedded to ensuring accretive growth for the shareholders, and that is what is important to us, not the capacity, not the growth. It's basically the bottom line.
Okay, great. Thank you, and I'll pass it on.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Puneet Gulati from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity. Can you please help us guide as to, after raising this equity, where would you sit on debt equity, debt EBITDA metrics after your completed, after all your committed capacity is actually on ground?
Thank you, Puneet. Pawan here. The debt EBITDA metric for our operating portfolio, once they stabilize, so maybe after construction plus say another 6 months time when the plant starts operating at a sustainable or consistent level, and we have the receivable cycle also established, the debt EBITDA will be in the range of 5.5. Of course, if we keep adding projects and we keep adding debt for that, for which the EBITDA is not corresponding available at that period of time, the number may look very, very large. But if you look at like comparison for each project, what is the level of debt and what is the level of EBITDA they're generating, then the ratio will be around 5.5.
And X of this capital raise, where did you anticipate the debt EBITDA to be?
Very honestly, Puneet, this debt EBITDA per se will not really change much with this capital raise. As Ranjit explained in his transcript, when we did a thorough review of our portfolio, we realized that with the right mix of debt equity and leverage that we want on our balance sheet, it's prudent to pump in $75 million to complete our committed projects. Having said that, this is not necessarily being raised to kind of reduce the debt EBITDA metric below the level which is fairly acceptable in the market, including the bond and the debt side.
So is it fair to assume that if you don't raise this capital, you would still be able to complete your projects by raising debt or alternate source of capital?
Maybe we'll have to do over-leveraging beyond a level which the new management team, we are not very comfortable, right? So we would like to have a certain acceptable level of leverage, and that's what we also observed when we did our second green bond roadshow across globe. So investors were very, 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 very kind of sensitive about over-leveraging. So if you say that if you were not raising this money, whether we could have over-leveraged and all, I don't know. Theoretically, everything is possible. But the way we want to see our portfolio, we felt it is prudent to raise $75 million to complete our committed projects and only raise as much of debt as is normally acceptable and within a reasonable comfort zone.
Okay, and any significant debt repayments due over the next 2 years?
So, see, as I said, Puneet, that we raise long-term funding for all our projects. So, for each project, there is a repayment schedule, which is hard-coded well in advance. and project by project based on the cash flows and based on the interest payment obligation, the repayment schedule is drafted. So that is what it is. There is no major debt repayment as such which is due, which is not justified by the cash flows.
Yeah, but what do you need to repay over the next 2 years, for example, which is when you intend to build out the entire committed capacity? So what would the quantum be, roughly?
So, Puneet, this is Nathan. I just wanted to clarify that we are that was one of the committed things that we committed to providing disclosure on. We'll go through that in more detail as we get to next Friday, if we could just ask for your patience.
Sure. The other thing you talked about was, did I hear it right, rationalization of committed capacity? Are you looking at something like not building something what you've already committed?
Sorry, could you repeat that, please?
Yeah, so in your opening remark, you talked about rationalization of committed capacity. Is it right to infer that there may be some committed capacity which you may now intend not to build?
Absolutely. This is what we had committed in previous earning calls and the meetings with the shareholders and investors, that we are going through our committed capacity with a microscope. We, two projects we have exited already, and we will continue to see what are the best opportunities for us in the market, and continue to ensure that whatever we build, whatever we commit to, are the best projects in the market and are value accretive to our shareholders.
So how big were these two projects which you exited, and what kind of penalty do you typically have to pay for this?
So exited about 350 megawatts of projects, and there are no penalties associated with these exits.
And no potential disqualifications for future bids also?
No, there is no future disqualification.
So, Puneet, we are very, very sensitive that while we are evaluating our portfolio, each exit of the portfolio, whatever we choose, has to have a very strong rational merit as per the contractual terms. So we really don't want to, so both the projects that we exited were within the permissible framework, doesn't involve any relationship or any reputational or any financial implications.
Okay. That's all from my side. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to participants that you may press star and one to join the question queue. The next question is from the line of Joseph Socha from JMT Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning or good afternoon, as the case may be. One of the sort of value propositions here for this enterprise has been the notion that at a certain point there would be sufficient scale for the enterprise to begin feeding future development with internally generated cash flow should it choose to do so. Based on what you see now, if you get to 3 or 3.2 gigawatts or whatever, would the enterprise be capable of doing that, or are we going to see equity issuances basically any time you guys want to finance additional pipeline?
That's a very good question. The point is that, when we say that we can build projects on our own steam and don't need equity infusion into the company to build further projects, the good thing with the solar projects is that on day one, once they're constructed and commissioned, they are cash positive. So therefore, they start throwing out cash the day they start generating revenue. So at any given point in time, whether it is a 1,000 megawatt portfolio or a 2,000 megawatt portfolio or a 3,000 megawatt portfolio, you are always generating internal cash. The question is the opportunity out there. If tomorrow there is no opportunity out there for us to do value accretive growth, then the money that we have, we could potentially return to our shareholders. if we believe that the opportunity out there is X megawatt and that those X megawatts can be built with the internal cash generation, we don't need any outside equity support. If we believe that, you know, the company is capable of building and taking advantage of the opportunity that India renewable energy market offers so that we can raise further equity to give value-accretive growth to our shareholders, we can choose to do that. So we are not chasing growth. We are not chasing megawatts. We are not wanting to be the largest megawatt company in the country. We are very cognizant of our responsibilities to our shareholders. So the decision on equity will depend on the opportunity out there.
Okay, and so that would imply then, thank you, that's an interesting answer. That would imply then that we can expect communication from you all about an IRR hurdle rate for new projects going forward, so that hopefully we can have some insight into your thought process about whether, you know, equity is going to be raised or you know, whether those projects are not necessarily worth financing, at least with equity, given the, you know, the cost of that versus the potential return on that investment. Is that a way of thinking of it?
Yeah, so I think what I would like to say is we'll probably provide a bit more disclosure on this as we get to next week's earnings call. Today, what we really wanted to do is just to focus on the transaction. We have talked generally about equity IRRs, et cetera, but I think next eight business days or so.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Thank you. That's a helpful answer. I'll jump back in queue.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Maheep Mandloi from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking a question. Ranjit, could you throw some light on the equity gap, the analysis which you did, and just wanted to understand what was it driven by the puts and takes? I think the previous questions you spoke about, it wasn't related to changing leverage ratios. So just wanted to get a better handle of the underlying decision assumptions here.
So, you know, the portfolio committed, when we looked at the cash that we had, the equity that we had, and the equity that we needed to build out the committed capacity, the gap, there was this $25 million gap to ensure that we do not over-leverage our projects, right? We are, cognizant of the fact that this is a utility scale business, right? This is a utility. These are utility projects with returns where, by taking on additional leverage, you are increasing the risk to your portfolio. And each of these projects is a large project. And when we finance projects irresponsibly, we can end up having trouble in repaying our debt. So we don't want to do any of that stuff. We want to do the leverage that is available in the market. Like Pavan mentioned, once the project is built, the debt by EBITDA ratio should be 5.5 or around that. And when we see what is the total capex required for the committed capacity, the money that we have in hand, the leverage that we want to achieve, this is the number that we were falling short by.
Got it. And any cost increases because of the tariffs or financing or any other reason for these projects?
Partly, yes, because there is even the tariffs have started partly moving up. So even the cost assumptions. So when we say we did a thorough review, we looked at the portfolio. We had our cost assumptions. Of course, our cost assumptions are also fairly conservative. We really, before start of the project, we really don't want to paint the scenario that module prices will aggressively continue to fall. So some bit of change in cost assumptions also before we starting construction. So partly the reason of that delta is to do with that as well.
Thanks, Owen. And then just one last question for me, and then we'll get back. Just logistically, could you just help us give us more color on what needs to happen till the GRUA meeting, and who gets to vote, and does the private placement need a board approval, or how does basically the logistics? How do we get from here to the final closing of the deal?
So, of course, we announce the record date, then we'll be kind of sending mailers to our shareholders. We'll be calling for extraordinary general meeting, wherein we'll seek shareholders approval for more than 10% of current share issue raise, as well as waiver of preemptive. So that is another, so 10 plus days for record date, 21 plus days for EGM. And then the closing. So these are the broad timelines, Mahip, unless you want anything more than this.
Yeah, Joe. Sorry, Mahip. This is Nathan. Just it's pretty much standard AGM's process. We have a binding agreement, and basically we just need shareholders to vote to approve the process, at which point if it is approved, then we believe that we are already in a position to close it.
Got it. Thanks. Thanks, both of you.
Thank you. Participants who wish to ask questions may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. The next question is from the line of Puneet Gulati from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you again. Just to get my numbers right, you had 3.3 gigawatt committed capacity. So post rationalization is only 3, is that, or 3.3 is post rationalization?
Yeah, Puneet. This is Nathan again. I apologize to interject. We really want to kind of discuss this in a holistic point of view on Friday. And today we just wanted to, we'll give you more details. Clearly we talked about rationalization in the call, but there's a multitude of reasons why we want to wait until next Friday.
Okay. And just because of, in terms of capital raise, can you also give some color whether you're seeing some increased issues in terms of collections from some of the other states, which is also driving, you know, a need for a higher equity cushion? Are you seeing any delays in collections from other discounts?
Well, Puneet, in fact, there has not been any, delays. You know the Andhra issue. I mean, everybody in the power sector across the world seems to know about the Andhra Pradesh issue.
Yes.
Where the 1,800 megawatt portfolio that we have only a 50 megawatt exposure there. So we are actually quite blessed that we have very little exposure to the Andhra issue. Apart from that, it is business as usual. There are some distribution companies that pay a little late. There is SECI and Gujarat and NTPC and Bangalore distribution companies that pay spot on or early. So the profile of payments and receivables has not deteriorated for us, except on that 50 megawatt Andhra.
And Puneet, we'll be offering more breakup by counterparty in our upcoming disclosure next Friday.
Okay, that's great. But just quickly on Andhra, I heard 3 days back when the generators were going to collect the dues at 2.44. Were you guys a party to that, and did it get collected?
It's a continuing development, continuing developing story in Andhra. Unfortunately, we can afford perhaps to be a little flippant because of the fact that our exposure is limited. But, our colleagues, our peers who have higher exposures, it is unfortunately a continually evolving story. The good thing in that Andhra story is that the central government is solidly behind the industry. The central government is supporting all the developers and all the folks very, very well on this issue.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, okay, that's all for my side. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. That was the last question in queue. On behalf of Azure Power, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.